it kind of put a challenge ahead of Max, which we know for much of these 10 races he hasn't really had.
They were what Red Bull is now. They were that team that had the target on their back, as Toto Wolff said.
That's what racing should be. And Charles Leclerc even said that after the race, that, you know, I hope you enjoyed that because this is what, you know, Formula One should be.
The narrative was Lewis is great, Bottas is just good. You know, he's not. And that's kind of what where we're at with Perez.
Welcome back to Unlapped. Monza was a success, as it always is. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It means a great deal to me, and it means a great deal to the boys. The boys are back from Monza, and I can't wait to hear all about it. Lawrence Edmondson, Nate Saunders, who would like to go first? Whoever drank more wine on the ground in Italy?
That's quite a tough one. I think that could be a toss-up between the two of us. I'll let Lawrence go first. I reckon Lawrence edges it, maybe.
Although
he was
driving. Okay.
He was designated driver.
I was going to say, I was designated driver at least a few nights.
Wow, very responsible.
I've got to say, a bit of a shout-out to McLaren. They put on a quiz, a kind of traditional British pub quiz-style quiz, on the Friday night at Monza. And they supplied the media with lots of very difficult questions and quite a few shots of tequila, vodka, whiskey, whatever you please. So, yeah, I think there we were probably level pegging, weren't we, Nate? Although I feel like Nate actually ended up drinking more because he had more penalty shots. But I'll let him explain why.
Yeah, so there were penalty shots if you were looking at your phone or if the judge, as the person doing the quiz, judged you to be in need of one. I was doing a fantasy NFL draft remotely at that time. I was drafting 5th overall, and I was telling the guys, I've got a draft. And they said, every time you're on your phone, you've got to take a shot. So I would literally go up to the bar, take a shot, run out, pick Travis Kelce, come back, and then probably do a shot again that I didn't need to take. So I ended up doing quite a few there. So that was quite fun. And we'd drafted the day before, in person for another league, our F1 fantasy league, which I started, I think, 3 years ago. Red Bull opened up their motorhome for us this year, which was really cool. We've got the head of comms, Paul Smith, now, who's a friend of the pod, I think, at this point. Mm-hmm. He's in the league. And yeah, we had the stickers, we had the board and everything. So for me, a very, very NFL draft themed week, as well as all the racing, a draft in person.
And we have a picture. We should just show everybody the picture of you with your board. It's pretty incredible. I, for one, love that you guys were drafting overseas, in Monza before the Grand Prix. How'd you feel about your team?
Not great. Not great. I mean, people watching, if they want to pause that and tell us who the best team was. There's teams 1
Please
through
do.
12. Please do. I think I was team 2 in that. Lawrence, do you remember which one you were?
I think I was drafting at number 6, which six I didn't like. Guys I wanted kept going. It was tough.
See, this is what's great. A few years ago, Lawrence and a few other journalists who I hang out with had no idea about NFL. Now they're talking to me about, oh, you know, when it comes back round to me on the, you know, on the river, you know, oh, I want this guy. I've got a handcuff. You know, I've got to handcuff this running back. It's great. I've turned them into all just NFL
junkies,
crazed junkies. Yeah, it's really good.
I'd like to add, I still don't really know anything about NFL, but I have learned a little bit about how to do fantasy NFL. I've learned a few like little tricks of the trade, but I still, I'm not an expert whatsoever about NFL. Nate very much is though. So there's no excuse if he doesn't win, right? If I win.
Exactly. And yeah, I've only won one of the 3 years. And the year I won was when it was the first year. And I basically had the advantage over everyone because I know what I was doing. Since everyone's learned more, I've stopped winning, which I think says a lot about my talent at NFL fantasy.
But now, of course, let's talk about Monza and the race winner, Max Verstappen. 10 consecutive race wins. We all knew that it was, I'd say, pretty likely that it was going to happen. We were wondering if maybe a Ferrari was going to contend. We'll get into that as well. But Max Verstappen now, the sole possessor of that incredible record. What was it like, Laz, on the ground?
I think it was definitely one of the more exciting of the 10 consecutive races he's won, because we had a Ferrari starting on pole at Monza for at least kind of 14, 15 laps. It looked like Carlos Sainz might be able to give Max a run for his money as well. I mean, I think even Carlos in the car was starting to think, hello, you know, if these tires hold on, I've got a chance here. Of course, they didn't. And Max, you know, I think knew exactly what he was doing, bided his time, and did what he's done so well this year. Now, 12 times in total winning races, 10 in, 10 consecutively, and took advantage and went on to win. But yeah, it was fantastic because I think having Ferrari up there, which I know we're going to go and talk on to, you know, was really helped kind of build the atmosphere ahead of the race. It kind of put a challenge ahead of Max, which we know for much of these 10 races, he hasn't really had. And Max still came out on top. But I think it was fantastic for him. You know, I still don't know exactly how much these records mean to him. But I think, you know, any driver winning 10 races, even in a career, is, you know, an impressive achievement. There's a lot of drivers, very good drivers who have won less. So to do it 10 in a row, I mean, that is fantastic. And we talked about that last time, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again now.
Well, someone was pretty keen to downplay the record, and that was direct rival and team boss of Mercedes, Toto Wolff. Essentially, he said he didn't even know, you know, if Max cared about the records, but he brought it down to it's just for Wikipedia. No one reads that anyways. Nate, so surprised to hear that from the Austrian.
Yeah, so we were to be honest with you, it's been quite a quiet season for Mercedes and Red Bull. So we were delighted to hear that quote because it throws a bit of wood onto the fire a little bit. And we, you know, that's kind of, you know, what we got so used to in 2021. We then started looking at it and we realized that Wikipedia is the fourth most read website in the world. So I don't think Toto Wolff has the same opinion of Wikipedia as the majority of people that know what Wikipedia is about. But I thought it was an interesting comment. And I think, you know, it was a bit of a strange one to me. Because it is a big deal, you know, it is kind of unprecedented. And, you know, I think I feel as well at the moment, anytime Mercedes are kind of commenting on Red Bull and Max's dominance, if it isn't glowingly positive, then even if they've got some justification for what they say, it just comes across as sour grapes a little bit, doesn't it? Because this is a team that dominated for so long. You know, they had it their own way for so many years, and full credit to them for doing that. Because at the time they were what Red Bull is now. They were that team that had the target on their back, as Toto Wolff said on Netflix. But everyone was chasing them, and that's flipped around now. And now it's Red Bull out in front. And Red Bull had to wait 8 years to win that Constructors' Championship, 7 to win a Drivers' Championship. And I think, you know, it's quite telling that Red Bull aren't rising to this bait in a way they might have done in 2021. You know, Christian was asked about not those comments, but about Lewis Hamilton's comments earlier in the weekend about Max not having as strong teammates as him. And Christian just kind of brushed it off and said, I don't want to get into that. And he again said, I don't think anyone would beat Max in this car, you know, which is kind of a way of responding to Lewis without actually calling him out. So, yeah, it was strange to hear Toto say that, but I think it probably shows you where Mercedes's head is at. I think they still feel, you know, fairly aggrieved about 2021. I think they're still, you know, they've talked a bit about the budget cap and maybe Red Bull didn't get punished as heavily as some teams would have liked. I wonder how much that is playing in their, you know, in their mind when they're saying these things. But yeah, it's hard to sound good when you're kind of throwing that much shade on a team that's like, because at the moment, Red Bull have won 12 races, or was it 13 races this year? 12 races this year. Max has won 10 in a row. The other teams haven't really been close. And that's on Mercedes, that's on Ferrari, that's on Aston, that's on McLaren, etc. So when you come out and you say things like that, because, you know, when he says it's for Wikipedia, it's like, well, it is for Wikipedia. And the reason it's in Wikipedia is because it's an incredible achievement. It's historic. Mm-hmm. And it's something Mercedes, you know, no Mercedes driver managed to do in that time when they were dominating. Schumacher didn't manage to do it. So you can sit there and say, oh, it's just for Wikipedia. But it's like, yeah, but it wasn't like he was beating a Mercedes record even. He was beating a record that Mercedes never got close to. So great in terms of it gives us something to talk about. But I just think the tone of it is all wrong for Mercedes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing, isn't it, in sports when teams dominate for ages, you can very quickly become a sour loser once that period starts. And I've got to be honest with you, I feel like some of the things we're hearing out of Mercedes, it does feel like that. You know, it's a team that dominated for so long, and the stuff they're saying, it's just, there's not a huge amount of kind of class and grace to it. And at the same time, part of me thinks Toto probably looked at it and said, all the headlines tonight are going to be about Max. Let's just flip it around and make it about Toto Wolff, which at the same time is pretty smart, right? Because now everyone's talking about not Red Bull and Max, they're talking about what Toto Wolff said. So, and I've just spent that entire time talking about it as well. So I'm, you know, it's just Toto's world maybe, and we're just living in it. Maybe that's it as well. But yeah, It probably will be the quote of the season, I think, especially if Max keeps winning, because in Wikipedia by the end of the year it could be 18 straight.
Could be. It easily could be.
Yeah.
And I can't believe you're going to make me do this, because I wanted to jump right into Ferrari because I was so unbelievably impressed by both drivers. But because you mentioned it and we're already talking about Mercedes and maybe a little sour grapes, I bring you Lewis Hamilton's comments ahead of the Grand Prix. He said, when I qualified half a second, 6/10 ahead of Valtteri Bottas, the media didn't say the same thing as they say today when Max qualified 6/10 ahead of Checo. It's blown up much more. In my personal opinion, Valtteri and all of my teammates have been stronger than the teammates Max has had. Okay, real quick, let's just break it down before you debate it, boys. Lewis's teammates, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Nico Rosberg, Valtteri Bottas, George Russell. Max's teammates, Carlos Sainz, Daniel Ricciardo, Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, and now Sergio Perez. Fair statement to make, Lawrence, out of bounds.
I think the reasons for him saying it are a little out of bounds, but I do kind of agree with what he's saying, because if you look at his teammates, well, three of them are world champions. Mm-hmm. None of Max's are world champions. And George Russell, I think, genuinely has the potential to go on and win a championship. Looking at the others, maybe Albon, if things go right in his career, you know, but the others, I'm not sure they're of that caliber. So I do think there is something in what Lewis is saying. I think it's a little bit ungracious to bring it up now, you know, when all the focus is on Max. But, you know, I can kind of see where he's getting to. With the Toto ones, I just want to go back to that, because like, I don't agree with what Toto said. I think the fact that Max has won 10 races in a row is impressive, you know, because it's never been done before. And there's a reason it's never been done before, because it is incredibly hard to do. But there are factors that contribute towards that. And also, if you look at the drivers that have previously held the record, you know, they're not necessarily drivers that you hold up as the very, very best that have ever raced in F1. So Sebastian Vettel previously had it, but he won those 9 races. And then the next year in 2014, didn't win a race at all. So there's some very key ingredients that go into winning X amount of races in a row. And it's basically having a very dominant car. So I think when we talk about how great an achievement this is by Verstappen, we should actually talk about how great an achievement it is by Verstappen and Red Bull, because Red Bull have built this dominant car that's allowed him to go and win races basically uncontested, and also a reliable car. You need a car that, you know, 10 races in a row finishes. That sounds maybe simple in the modern era of F1, but it's really not. And also in the past, it's been increasingly difficult it's been very difficult to do in the past. So the other thing you need is a teammate who's not very competitive, a teammate who's going through a bit of a poor patch. So when Vettel did his 9, it was the end of Webber's career at Red Bull. And it really was a shadow of the driver that we'd known previously as Mark Webber, challenging for the championship in 2010. He really had, you know, lost out. And then again, next year, Vettel went up against Ricciardo, and Ricciardo actually beat him quite easily. And then you look at someone like Ayrton Senna. You know, I consider Ayrton Senna among the very best drivers in the world. The most consecutive races he ever won was 4. And he did that in 1988. I think he did it other times as well. And in 1988, he had a dominant car, as dominant almost, or possibly as dominant as this current Red Bull. But the difference being is that he had Alan Prost as a teammate who was pushing him to the championship. So while I don't agree that this, you know, Toto said this was an irrelevant record, I absolutely do not agree with that. But it is an unusual record in that there's usually key ingredients that go into it. You know, the fact that Lewis is on 5, Nico Rosberg is on 7 consecutive wins as his record. And that's because at the end of the 2015 season, Lewis won the title, didn't really bother showing up to the final 3 races, and then had a bunch of reliability issues at the start of 2016. So Rosberg, you know, he well done for getting 7 in a row, but there's always, you know, circumstances involved with winning in this fashion, I think. So, yeah, just things to like try and see it from the other side. Again, I'm not saying I agree with Toto. I don't think it was, particularly, sporting or the right thing to say at that moment. But there is an argument that perhaps this record is an unusual one, in that it requires some various things to be in place. And one of those, undoubtedly at the moment, is Perez not fighting Verstappen for whatever reason. I don't know if we're going to ever find out that reason, but certainly there's something going on there which isn't working for Perez.
Yeah.
The other part of that statement from Lewis that I thought was strange, because I'm the same with Lawrence. I actually tend to agree with him on his teammates, just because you look at the pedigree of them. But the bit that was weird, I thought, was when he said, when when I was out qualifying Bottas, the media didn't talk about it in the same way. Because that's one thing we did do repeatedly. You know, we constantly were, you know, the joke was, oh, it's Bottas 2.0 this year, it's Bottas 3.0, it's Bottas 4.0, and he'd win an early race and everyone would get excited and then he'd just disappear and drop off. You know, and Lawrence and I have talked about this before. If you really want to get into the weeds of it, you know, Bottas by the end of 21, especially, his form had really just dropped off. And you could argue Lewis, obviously there's the whole Michael Massey situation, but if Bottas is in a better position at the end of that, you know, that that race, Max can't make that free pit stop that basically changed everything. So in that sense, he's right. You know, we weren't super critical of Bottas after Abu Dhabi, which was because we were talking about Michael Massey. But I feel like for the majority of that time, the narrative was Lewis is great, Bottas is just good. You know, he's not. And that's kind of what where we're at with Perez. The difference being, I don't think Bottas was ever in a car where it was this one-sided in terms of it's just Mercedes winning. You know, there was always Ferrari were in the mix or Red Bull were in the mix. But I think it shows a bit of a short memory from Lewis, because it wasn't like he and Bottas were fighting wheel to wheel. I don't really remember any race where Bottas beat Lewis, you know, by passing him on track. That, you know, he had some very strong races. I'm just looking on Wikipedia now. He's got 10 race wins. So
wait, you know, you're Max looking at Wikipedia?
Yeah, yeah, a little known website called Wikipedia. I'm actually looking. I've actually got F1 records up there as well. It's pretty good. It's worth a read at some point. But yeah, and you know, you just look quickly through the wins there. It's a bit like the wins that Checo's getting. There's wins here and there. We're like, oh, he was great that weekend, but he was never in the fight in the same way. So I think Lewis has got a bit of a short memory there, because you know he always talks about Bottas as if he was, you know, it's his favorite teammate ever. But from a competitive standpoint, I think Bottas is probably one of his weakest. And if he looks at Button, Alonso, etc., and you know, he, especially those two guys, you know, they were so, so strong. And obviously Rosberg, who won a championship against him. Those guys were way stronger than Bottas. And I think it was just a weird comparison for him to use, because it was exactly the same as what's happening now. I think it's just a bit more acute because Max is winning so much and Perez has been so bad. But that was the bit from the Lewis quotes I thought really stood out to me.
Also, while we're on it, shout out for Heikki Kovalainen, who we missed on our list.
Yes.
forgotten Lewis Hamilton teammate. But of course, was the teammate that was going up against Lewis when he won his first title. So not insignificant. And, you know, as much as I like Kovalainen as a driver, I'm not sure he would match up that well against a lot of Max's teammates. With the Valtteri one and Perez, it is a really interesting comparison. But I think Valtteri was, you know, he wasn't. There were occasions where he got obliterated by Lewis, but not in the same way that Perez has by 1.2 seconds or whatever it was in Zandvoort. You know, like Perez is really off the boil at the moment. He wasn't at the start of the year, so he didn't start the year like this. But at the moment, something is, it's not working out for him. And I think it's a real shame, because the potential of Perez, I think, is up there with Bottas. Sure. But the reality is less so. Bottas had a bad season in, I think it was 2018, where he actually considered quitting the sport at the end of it. But then came back pretty strong in 2019. So, also, you know, let's see what Perez brings next year. If he can get his head straight as well, he might do something similar to what Bottas did, where have an awful season and then come back a bit stronger, perhaps not good enough to beat Max, but a bit stronger at least. And then we can reassess it then. But yeah, it's an interesting debate. But I would say Lewis has had the stronger teammates, but I don't think bringing that up now, you know, it kind of really makes any sense.
Yeah, it looks terrible, doesn't it? Timing.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It is time to give the people what they want. That is Ferrari time.
Finally, a positive
like my Ferrari
segment.
Dance? Ferrari. Well, it took us waiting. Way longer to get there than I was anticipating. So I'm anxious
sorry,
to talk about this. That's okay because it was it was great analysis and a good debate. And you brought it up. So that's the segue that we go with. Ferrari, my goodness, they might not have won the Italian Grand Prix, but what a showing from both of those drivers. Carlos Sainz, I know he was overtaken by Max and then Sergio, but what an effort defending. Also, thank you, Fred Vasseur, for allowing them to go at it at the end. A part of me was like, oh my gosh, they're going to ruin this moment. Like, what if they crash? And then there goes the points. There goes a possible podium. But that was highly entertaining. And I'm so glad we got to witness it from the two of those drivers. What did you guys think of it watching it firsthand?
It was fantastic. And just the emotion that Ferrari at Monza builds in the Tifosi, as they're called, the Ferrari fans, is fantastic. You know, it's almost tangible when you're there on the grid. And I don't actually know the piece of music, but they play a bit of Italian opera just as the cars roll into position in it was first place and third place, which I'd never noticed before at Monza, but they did it this time. And then it was back down to the kind of electronic dance music that seems to follow us around everywhere we go on grids at the moment. But there were some really nice emotional moments. And then that battle at the end, I mean, it's almost a shame it wasn't for a bit more. If it had been for a win, can you imagine those two Ferrari drivers going to... I think then maybe Fred would have brought in some strict team orders. The order was no risk. And I don't... You know, looking at that, that was not no risk driving. That was arguably, you know, some tiny little bit held back, but there was a lot of risk taken in that battle. But so good to see. And yeah, I think they were both absolutely loving it because that car has been awful at so many racetracks this year. And we finally kind of started to really understand the trend of it. And basically when you remove downforce from it on a track like Monza, where you need to remove downforce to decrease drag to have the car going faster on the straights, it all of a sudden sorts it out. And the underlying kind of mechanical balance of the car gets better. And so the two of them were really, you know, I think enjoying that car this weekend, which we cannot say at a number of races this year. And I think that's what allowed them to have such a brilliant battle at the end. I had to rewatch it back just on YouTube before we started this podcast. And I really recommend anyone to do it again. Like F1 have a little clip on YouTube of all the moves kind of going back and forth. And yeah, some of it is pretty wild. And Leclerc had it. He had it.
I know.
I think it was three laps from the end. And Sainz got him back. But that was so great. And that's what makes racing at Monza so good, is that no overtake is easy at Monza. But you can have proper racing when you have, even with two very evenly matched cars. So yeah, great to see.
There was such an internal struggle. I don't know if you felt like this, Nate, because Carlos had done such a nice job throughout the entirety of the race. But when Charles started pressing, you were like, okay, make something of this. Let's see if you can overtake it. And then you were like, well, no, Carlos has done such a good job. Just like, you know, back off and just let him have. So I just kept like going back and forth. And obviously, you know, Charles almost went into the back of him once or twice in certain corners. It was exciting as hell. I agree, Lawrence. If you didn't get to see the finish, you should go back and watch it. I know it didn't result, obviously, on both of them on the podiums, but that's what racing should be. And Charles Leclerc even said that after the race, that, you know, I hope you enjoyed that because this is what, you know, Formula One should be. So I thought it was kudos, I guess I should say, to Ferrari for a great outing.
Yeah, and I've got to say, hats off to Carlos Sainz, because I've criticized him before. You know, I've sometimes questioned, you know, is he the best driver for Ferrari? But I'm really impressed with him. You know, in he defended well against Max. You know, he knew that Max was probably going to get past him at one point, but was, you know, he didn't move over and just let Max pass. He said, if you want to get past me at Monza, you know, you're going to have to pass me properly. And then in that fight, I think it was really fair. You know, it was clean and fair from the two guys. And Leclerc probably should have done it. You know, if you look at, you know, the way the race played out for him versus Sainz, you know, I think actually did really, really well to get that third position. So I loved it. I mean, it was heart and mouth stuff. And I mean, it shows you how close the line is in sports, doesn't it, between being a hero and being a zero. Because if they had collided, we wouldn't have even talked about Max's 10 records off the beat here. We might have mentioned it and said, now let's get into the, you know, another shambolic performance at Ferrari. You know, they've hit each other, etc. And they were so close to doing that. So I'm glad that wasn't the story, because for what was really special after the race was at Monza, the crowd always runs onto the track, stands under the podium, but it's never quite as energetic when there's not a Ferrari driver on that podium. There's still fans there, but Sainz was obviously third. And when the Dutch national anthem came on for Max, they were chanting Carlos, Carlos, Carlos. And you could see kind of a wry smile on his face. You know, he obviously would have been wanting to stand where Max was standing for that. But it was just great. It was a really great, it was just theatre, I think, at that by the end. And I think if nothing else, Ferrari, they're probably going to come out of this season being pretty disappointed, all told, with where things started, you know, just how they've been over the season. But at least with Monza now, they've got this, they can point to this weekend and say, if nothing else, in front of the fans, as Fred Vasseur said, we put on a show for them. We didn't disgrace ourselves. You know, we didn't humiliate ourselves, you know, and Sainz stepped up in a big way. And I think that, you know, it ultimately there are still big problems, I think, with Ferrari, you know, going forward. They're still in a position they don't want to be in. But it's given this part of the season, I think, a different feel to it. And it just is a reminder that, you know, when Ferrari are in that place, they can kind of compete at the front. And we'd forgotten, we hadn't seen that for about a year and a bit, had we? Ferrari and Red Bull dicing, and then the Ferraris up in the front fighting for a podium. They've obviously had podiums, you know, since last year, but I almost forgot that they were able to do that. So I thought it was really nice. And I just hope now that Ferrari don't get a bit carried away with this and just let those two guys fight wherever, because I feel like, as Lawrence said, they were kind of, you know, they clearly both knew if we crash at Monza, I feel like we'll both be in big, big trouble. You know, they might not have that same restraint going to other places. But I mean, the fan in me wants to see them keep racing, but the Ferrari fan in me, I'm not sure if I've got that. I'm not sure if I've got, my heart's got that to see it again. So, but yeah, it was fantastic. And I think probably we'll go down as best few laps of the season at the end. It'll be hard to top.
It's going to be up there. And credit where credit's due here. Nate Saunders hit the trifecta this weekend. We do predictions on Unlapped every single weekend going into a race weekend. And the trifecta is when you accurately predict 1, 2, and 3. Nate Saunders.
So that's what I should have said.
Clap it up, Lawrence. I know you don't want to, but pretty damn good for you.
That's impressive.
We all bought into the Ferrari magic. We were all hoping for something at Monza, and you were able to nail it. So the standings are currently set at this. Lawrence, you're top of the pops, 36 points on the season. Nate trails just by 2 points after his big haul from Monza with 34 points. Katie is a little bit behind at 29 points, but I'm coming for you. Okay?
Hey, I think that gap is closing up. Unlike the Formula One Championship, we're all closing on the leader. Okay. Relentless pace.
Glad that you mentioned that.
And also, we should mention Katie missed the first two rounds, three rounds.
I know, I wasn't gonna make excuses, but I did miss the first two rounds.
I think that's a pretty big. I think it's a pretty big asterisk there, Katie. Yeah, that's
thank you.
Pretty big.
I appreciate Lawrence, you mentioning that to the fine folks that listen and watch. Mentioning constructor standings and driver standings, let's kind of just discuss best of the rest. Mercedes, I wouldn't say that was the best showing for them this weekend, but they were able to finish P5 and P6. Lewis is able to avoid, you know, that 5-second penalty. He also had the collision with Oscar Piastri that led to that penalty. He did, in fact, go apologize for the incident that essentially knocked Piastri off of his day. Albon, again, as I feel like mentioned week in, week out, continues to impress in the Wilbon or in the Williams. Now I'm just blending words together at this point. Jesus. And then Nate, your guy, Liam Lawson, P11. How about it? Who impressed you guys outside of Ferrari and Red Bull?
Yeah, I think you mentioned there with Albon. I've been impressed with Albon all season. And I think one of the things that was gutting for Albon last year, I mean, he had appendicitis, you know, it's pretty awful, you know, in the context of it. But he felt that Monza was such a big opportunity last year. And obviously Nick DeVries stepped into his car, and fair play to DeVries, you know, he did a good job that got him, you know, what turned out to be a quite short-lived F1 stint this year. But they knew Monza was going to be quick, and he delivered there. So Albon's just been really impressive. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because part of me wonders, we were talking about teammates earlier, part of me wonders how much better he's being made to look by the fact that, you know, so we're not really seeing the same from Sargent, but you can only really judge on what we're seeing, and Albon's looking great. So I was impressed with him. I'm sure I'm missing an obvious candidate as well, but Albon, yeah, just consistently standing out.
Yeah, I 100% agree with Albon. I think he was a standout performer behind Max and the and Sainz. But the other guy, I guess we've got to give a shout out to Bottas. Finally got a point back on the board for Alfa Romeo. Not been an easy time at Alfa Romeo whatsoever. And even in Monza, I don't think anyone was realistically expecting to get a point at that team before the start of the race. But yeah, he made it happen. So there you go. And you know, after you were slagging off Bottas in this podcast, Nate, there he is.
Yeah. When you said that, I was like, oh, damn, I picked the wrong time to slag him off.
But no, I mean, look, it's so hard to judge the performance of drivers when they're further down the grid. I think this is a problem we regularly have, is that you don't really know how good these guys are, you know, because you're rating against teammates that are less proven. You know, Albon, I think, is actually doing a spectacular job.
Yeah.
But, you know, his teammate is rookie Logan Sargeant. And, you know, it's clear that Sargeant's struggling a bit now as he's kind of got further into this debut year. So it's always tricky to know exactly what's going on in these teams. But the other cool thing about Bottas was the delivery, the paintwork on Alfa Romeo, which if you didn't see, definitely go back and check it out, because I think it was probably the coolest looking F1 car on any grid for several years, maybe decades. It
wow.
It looked good. We talk about one deliveries. We've been quite critical of them.
I was going to say.
We don't
necessarily. It's a big deal coming from you.
But that one, up Monza as well. So it's basically the Italian flag, the tricolore over the engine cover. Looked fantastic. So, yeah, there you go. Another shout out to whoever designed that, Alfa Romeo, along with Albon and Bottas.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Couple bit of notes before we say our goodbyes. Formula One's 10 teams all spent within the budget cap in 2022. Nate, did they not? They are all clear. Yes.
Well done. Well done to the 10 teams. I'm glad that this news has come out. I think we're all dreading news like last year where, you know, there's an overspend. And obviously, I think that still lingers with Red Bull. You know, that there was the overspend there, the penalty they got. I think people still question, was the wind tunnel penalty, has actually had an impact on them. But I mean, I think the FIA has done this huge audit. And I mean, I mentioned it in the piece we wrote for Sight, but from talking to teams this year, that included them actually, the FIA actually looking at WhatsApp messages of team members to make sure that any work they're doing away from Formula One wasn't actually kind of, being siphoned off into the team, because that was a big fear, especially some of the bigger companies, you know, your Mercedes, your Red Bull teams that have, you know, all of these different arms to their company, to make sure they're not doing stuff within Formula One. I think that was a big concern coming into this year. That audit to strengthen the team, they've come out a few weeks before last year's one. Obviously, that lingered in. We were in Austin, weren't we, all of us, talking about it and knowing that it was coming. So, yeah, it's a good thing going forward. And I think what was encouraging as well, the FIA said they're going to keep working on improving this system. I think everyone in F1 wants this to be done a bit quicker every year. But, if you look at how big an undertaking that is, it's pretty difficult to get it done, you know, straight away, because it's, you know, 10 teams you've got to do a full audit for. So we don't often give the FIA, don't always give the FIA huge glowing credit. But I think in this case, it seems like they've done a pretty thorough job with it. I haven't heard any teams complaining about it. We heard some rumblings, didn't we, around Belgium time that someone had overspent. But the FIA came to us and said, I don't know how anyone could know that because we haven't finished the audit yet of the teams. So I think that was a lot of horseplay going on between the teams, you know, just people trying to get news stories out there.
They don't do that.
Yeah. It only took them 2 years for every team to be within it, you know, and I think the big fear going into this budget cap era was that it just wasn't going to be enforceable or whatever. And you know, F1's adapted to it really quickly. The teams have got their heads around it fast. I don't think we'll always be in this position where teams aren't, you know, are in compliance. But this year, well, for 2022, sorry, they all got the certificate of compliance as well. Makes me laugh because you used to get a certificate if you like, if you swam 50 meters, you know, at your local leisure center when you were a kid, and then 75 meters, you'd get a certificate. So I wonder if, you know, next to their trophy cabinet, they can stick up a little certificate that says.
Surely they don't get a printed piece of paper, do they?
Yeah, and it just says, I complied with the 2022 budget cap, and it's signed by Mohammed Ben Sulayem and signed by your team boss, and, you know, you get a big A star or something. I think that's the best way going forward for them to mark these certificates.
They'll start hanging them in the lobby next to their world championship. Yeah,
like, there's our Monza trophy from 2010. There's our certificate of compliance from 2022. Very proud of that one. There's Monza from the next year.
I imagine, like, you, it certainly gave us something to talk about last year in what was probably not a very exciting into the season. I'm glad to close the book on 2022 in terms of budget cap. So we have done that. Good on everybody for complying and staying within the limits. Thank you so much. Quickly, off weekend, then we've got Singapore. Do we have an update on Daniel Ricciardo's recovery and when, if we will see him sometime soon?
Yeah, Singapore doesn't look very likely. Very unlikely, which is not a surprise. I mean, you know, he broke a bone in his hand to get that back to a state where he can go racing. Seems unlikely. So apparently the recovery is going well as could be expected. Kind of better than perhaps, you know, your average person if they broke their hand. It's going to take some time. And Singapore looks like Lawson's going to be back in the car. And then Suzuka, I'd be very surprised as well, just because it's a demanding circuit. It's only 1 week after Singapore. And they have talked about not rushing Daniel back. I in my mind, I think Qatar is a realistic goal. But I don't know, Nate, if you've heard any differently.
No, that's lined up with everything I've heard. I think Daniel would want to come back as quickly as possible. But also, you know, he can kind of undo a lot of the goodwill from those first two races he had back if he rushes back, isn't fully fit, can't compete properly. So I think, you know, he at the moment, I think from what I am hearing is, I think even with this injury, I think it's pretty likely he'll stay with AlphaTauri next year. So Liam Lawson now is in an interesting position because he's got this chance to kind of almost audition for the potentially for the Tsunoda seat. So I think that that's more where AlphaTauri's head's at the moment. Obviously, would be great to have him back in the car soon, but good on Lawson as well. You know, he finished 11th at the weekend. I think it was pretty impressive. I think Ricciardo was targeting Monza as a place where he could get points. You know, when he first came back, they looked at that and said, that's a good opportunity. So, yeah, pretty gutting for him. But, I think, Qatar sounds likely. And, I mean, I think Daniel Ricciardo, I don't think there's any chance he'd ever miss Austin. I think, you know, he could have broken both his hands, both his feet. I think he'd still find a way to race in Austin, regardless. So we'll definitely have him back for the two US races, and potentially Qatar as well. I could see that happening. So in a long way of saying yes, I agree with everything Lawrence just said.
Apologies. Yeah. So if you miss the two Asia races, okay, fine and good. Qatar is on October 8th. So if you unfortunately there's a setback or something and he misses the next three, you know, at COTA you've got quite a bit of time to really work with to make sure you're definitely healthy going into the United States Grand Prix. So obviously, you know, those fans really want to be there and see him race, especially now that he's back in the sport. As always, I appreciate y'all's analysis and your time. Enjoy the weekend off. Laz, when are you heading to Singapore?
Monday night flight. And it takes best part of a day to get there.
Okay. Well, enjoy the humidity. We can't hear. Wait to see what you have to say about the time spent in Singapore. Enjoy your all's weekend. Thanks for listening to Unlapped. Hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back next week to break down Singapore and give you the preview that you need. Cheers.